Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom, and we are doctors of physical therapy, bringing you the body tips and PT pearls to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in.
So just got to remind everyone out there that 2 days from now, count them, 2 days, we have a free program starting that Jen put together for everyone out there that has ever had any issues with their knees. She's going to teach us mobility. She's going to teach us how to properly load the knees. And I'm telling you, she is an absolute magician when it comes to these types of things. I personally am somebody who throughout football, throughout my PT program even, didn't quite know how to load my knees well and have had issues throughout because of it. I've had meniscal issues on both of my knees and actually had meniscus taken out of one of my knees. And even since being with Jen, since reapproaching how I do mobility in my own body and how I learned to safely load my knees, it has made an absolute world of difference. So on the 26th, on Wednesday, the first video is going to be coming out. And if you go to the link in the show notes right now, you'll be able to get those emails sent directly to you and follow along. It only takes about 10 or 15 minutes every day. And I promise you, if you follow all five of these days, you will learn so much that is going to be able to benefit your knees and your overall movement into the future. So check it out, sign up, and follow along. So hopping into our next PT pearl, we just brought you tennis elbow. We're going to head to the other side of the elbow and dive into golfer's elbow. I really don't know why they named both of these after sports, though.
Right, because we already know from the previous episode that 90% of cases are not sport specific. They're actually more job, labor specific.
Yeah, so when we're talking into golfer's elbow, for tennis elbow, we were talking more about the outside of the elbow, or if you're on the thumb side of kind of your forearm. Golfer's elbow is going to be on the pinky side, or what we call the ulnar side of the elbow. And again, if you flex your wrist towards you,
so bring your fingers towards your forearm.
Yeah, fingers towards your forearm.
The inside.
You can feel that mass on the inside of your forearm kind of get nice and tight. And that comes right from this little knobby thing. Again, that is a medical term that I use all the time. Little knobby thing on the inside of your elbow called your medial epicondyle has this flexor mass coming off of it.
Yes, exactly. So formerly known as medial epicondylitis, but we also know that it's not necessarily an inflammation state. So the epicondylitis is not so much anymore. So you could say epicondylosis. So that's more of just like general tendon overuse degeneration. Stuff is happening at that tendon, and now you're starting to feel pain, essentially.
It's also called golfer's elbow, pitcher's elbow, again, because these ones are popularized because you'll have like professional athletes or higher level athletes. And I think that's how those names kind of leak into the mainstream, is like you'll have pitchers in different sports getting this pain on the inside of their elbow. Mm-hmm. Again, that's a similar area that a lot of pitchers have injury called UCL injury, or ulnar collateral ligament. That's where, if you've heard of Tommy John surgery, a lot of pitchers, like prominent pitchers, will get Tommy John surgery. But again, that also is just, we're overloading the inside of the elbow.
Right.
And so our discussion really always lies around, why are we overloading the inside of that elbow, and how can we find ways to move more optimally so we're not just specifically using that area?
Exactly, because like we talked about in the other one, it's not that your body can't handle it. It's when the stressors then become too much because we're not utilizing other parts of the body, or we're only utilizing this part, and we might be also inflaming the body in general and causing degeneration of tissues in general based on what we're doing in our environment and our lifestyle changes as well, which also have a toll on our entire body as a system.
Yeah, because kind of how you mentioned up front, similar with the lateral epicondylitis or tennis elbow, the inflammatory process isn't something that's really going on or present the whole time.
Right. Like, especially, it's not like you have specific swelling just right there.
Yeah. Like, I don't play golf and like the inside of my elbow doesn't swell up and get all hot and red. No, we just have that achiness and that pain that really starts to set in every time after we get home from work as a mechanic or working, typing all day. We might just feel some of that achiness and pain in our elbow. So again, what's happening, that flexor mass that we were talking about, has a bunch of different muscles again.
All right, that, five muscles. Go, Dom.
Five muscles. Pronator teres, flexor ulnaris, flexor carpi radialis, flexor digitorum, superficialis.
Ooh, okay.
And it's a small one. Palmaris.
Palmaris longus. Good job.
I didn't even look at those beforehand.
I know. That was very good.
That's from like a week ago or a few days ago when we were writing those all down.
That was very good. I'm very impressed.
I'm happy with myself.
But basically, you don't need to know all of those different muscles. You just need to know that they're on that inside of that forearm. They cause flexion of that wrist. And they are your flexors that connect all the way into that common flexor tendon that we usually feel the pain on that epicondyle.
Totally. And same with all of our other tendinosis or processes where we get this degeneration of the tendon. We just get this disorganization of the collagen fibers that are integrated with the fascia in the area, integrated with the actual common flexor tendon that's in that area. And that's when we start getting that real disorganization chronically, that it's not working as optimally as it was right away. Mm-hmm. And that's where over time we'll feel that pain more and more set in.
Right. You know, it could be recurrent little micro tears that are causing that remodeling. And it could also start to go along the line of developing necrosis, calcification. We also get to take a look at what's happening along that nerve root that comes right there as well, or not the nerve root, but the nerve pathway, which is that ulnar nerve, right? And that if you hit your funny bone on the inside of that elbow, usually people, that pain that you feel when you hit that elbow is not pain from the bone, it's that you hit the nerve.
Funny at all. No, it's, and again, nerves are the things that perceive the pain, and anytime that we have a lot more tension or stress in an area, a lot less space, like for that ulnar nerve, it's running right by that flexor mass, right along the fascial plane, kind of on the ulnar side. When we say ulnar side, we mean pinky side. You know, that's the ulnar bone that comes all the way down and connects into our wrist, where the radius or the radial side is on the thumb side. So again,
there's your anatomy lesson for the day.
Right. And that's why if we tilt our hand towards our pinky, or that's called ulnar deviation, and then flex it up, we're actually going to overall probably put a little more stress into certain muscles or the flexor mass overall.
Right. And that's right where, you know, that ulnar nerve comes out. So imagine a lot of repetitive tension, a lot of repetitive motion just happening right around that area. It could start to have some numbness, tingling. You're going to have some pain in that area. You might feel radiating pain down the part where your flexors are. So all those wrist flexors right on the inside of the forearm. And that's why that numbness tingling can happen if it's affecting the nerve as well, which is something that we test for when we're looking at this as well.
For sure. And this one might even more so than tennis elbow affect our grip strength, because that flexor mass actually includes the flexor digitorum, or the thing that flexes our digits, our fingers. So our grip strength can really be impacted. And kind of similar to how we would test for tennis elbow, I mean, flex your wrist down towards your forearm and then try to resist. Does that irritate or aggravate more than you think it should? Again, another great way to test it out is just rubbing this flexor mass, kind of pressing into the tendon, pressing into those muscles there. Do you get a lot of tenderness just by doing that in a way that you either don't on the other side, if you're, you know, not feeling any symptoms on the other side, or on the outside of the elbow?
And a lot of the times when we're doing these tests, like, you want to extend the elbow as well, because it's going to put a little more stress and then bend in the wrist and kind of resist that way. And you can also do the opposite, where you can do a passive test, which is just extending the elbow and then extending the wrist out. And then that overstretch, that overtension on that area can cause some symptomatic pain and stuff that you might be feeling.
Yeah. And again, when we come into causes or what is causing this overuse, similar to tennis elbow, it's a lot of repetitive things. So you'll see a lot of people who work labor intensive jobs. Again, the common name that people use is golfer's elbow. But like we said, 90% of these are not sports related. It's just people working out in their everyday lives, doing the same things repetitively, whether that is working with tools, typing, working with your wrists in this flex position a lot, because then again, you're not getting that extension and that lengthening of that muscle, which is where you said sometimes if people just straighten their elbow and kind of bend their or cock their wrist back to stretch the front of that forearm, that flexor mass, that can be aggravating in itself.
Right, exactly. And some of the jobs that they just pointed out was like construction, plumbing, carpentry, you know, so we're thinking anything that's doing a lot of repetitive.
Yeah, like think about hitting a hammer, like you're constantly going from radial to ulnar deviation.
Yeah.
And a lot of the times you might specifically be pushing into that ulnar deviation and flexion because, again, we're also holding a tight grip on a tool or a hammer or
exactly.
something.
So you're using that grip, you're using those flexors.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another test that, again, if we want to look at like what's kind of happening on that ulnar side, if that ulnar nerve is getting affected, is Tenniel's test.
Mm-hmm. And that's basically just
tapping.
Yeah. Tenniel's test, or you can do that over any nerve, especially superficial nerves, that meaning that they run near the skin. So kind of like tapping over your funny bone, if that's really sensitive, just by tapping along the funny bone or along the ulnar side, the pinky side of your...
All the way down toward the wrist.
Yep, down towards your wrist. And you get tingling or numbness sensations mm-hmm. from that. That could be because the ulnar nerve is kind of getting entrapped in this flexor mass that's a bit disorganized and giving that nerve less space.
Exactly. So then the treatment would go a little bit more nerve related based as well, rather than just focusing on the tendon, the musculature. We would be incorporating some nerve flossing, nerve glides, all of that kind of stuff, which we did talk about on another episode as well. If you guys want to refer back to, what was that one? That was just our neuromuscular episode.
Neuromuscular reeducation.
Neurodynamics. One of those.
Something like that. It's great. I love nerve flosses and nerve glides myself, like nerve gloss. Put a little nerve gloss on it. That's a product. Coined that one. No, nerve flossing, it's great because once you learn how to kind of like gradually add a little tension into your nervous system, you can really affect a whole area or a whole line down mm-hmm. along that ulnar nerve and realize, oh, that might be one of the reasons that I continue to perpetuate a little more tension into this area.
Exactly. And then if we're just looking in general, how many people get this? It's very low. 0.4% of the population.
Yeah.
Usually, you know, middle-aged, again, we're looking at usually because you're working this job for however many years you've been working at, you're finally starting to overuse a little
bit. Yeah, I think it said like you could, in labor-intensive jobs, you could see it up to like 4 to 8% of the time. Mm-hmm. In people, specifically some that we named in construction or mechanic, you know, work or plumbing, stuff like that, that you're using tools a lot, using your hands and wrists a lot.
Right, exactly. So what do we do?
What do we do? Shoot some cortisone into it or something like that.
And here's the, I don't think we talked about this enough in the last one though. The reason we don't say, oh yeah, go out and get that cortisone shot is because it weakens the tissues around. So it's going to have an effect on those tendons that we actually want to get stronger.
Especially long term. And you know, again, some people will be at wit's end and say, well, I've got a cortisone shot and it actually made me feel a lot better to the point that I could start doing some therapy. You know, we don't like to always put up a hard wall and say, no, never do this. Like, I don't think you'll never hear us say something like that. but again, a lot of those types of therapies are meant to give our system enough of a buffer so that we can start to do some of the things that might heal ourselves. Like an application where cortisone or a PRP treatment or something like that could be great is we get that type of a shot and we have a really thought out, you know, therapy route or routine after that where it's like, okay, I'm going to get this, you know, if it helps give me benefit for 8 days, a week, 5 weeks, whatever it is, I'm going to work into doing some of these exercises now that we're going to talk about.
You have to get movement back in.
Yeah.
That's essential, especially if we want to get back to our everyday life. Like you can, if you have access to this stuff, and that's the other thing about PRP injections, like this is all still so new. It's not very accessible. And so it's also not the treatments we're going to go out and say, oh yeah, just go get that because it's just not, you know, readily available.
And
everyone.
It's meant to help stimulate your body's own healing,
exactly.
You know, processes. It's not meant to do the healing for you. I think so many people are under this misconception that you get the PRP injection in there and all of the healing is supposed to happen on its own.
Right, exactly.
No, you get the PRP injection and it stimulates more of that healing process. It gives you more of the tools to rebuild what you might need to rebuild in that area. But again, you still need to do the movement so your body knows how to use it. So your body knows what to do.
Yes, and that is the same with any passive modality treatment you get as well. So say you're getting laser treatment, you're getting ultrasound, you're getting massage, you're getting Graston. Any of these types of techniques that people are doing on you are only going to help to stimulate, one, a different symptom that you might be feeling. So it could calm down the area so that you can move a little bit more. But two, just to help, again, with the rebuilding of everything. Yeah. So maybe we're getting a little bit of, you know, some communication happening around that area so that we can then help stimulate it when we go do the exercise, sure. But nothing anyone is going to do passively is going to be the ultimate solution. So you got to put in a little bit of work. And if you're only going to put in work and do the exercises and throw all the other stuff away, it would work.
Yeah, totally. And then, so say one of those things might be a passive part of your treatment, you know, protocol, or exactly what you're choosing for your body. The other things that we always like to mention when you're starting, if it is really inflamed, just start with that active and passive range of motion. Can I get into that full flexion? Can I get into that full extension? Full extension with that elbow straightened? Can I put some overpressure on it? Is that feeling okay? Do I need to stay there for just a few days to help calm it down, to start putting load through that flexor mass and that common flexor tendon?
Exactly.
Once we feel like we're getting that full range of motion back, then we can start to load it a little more.
Yep. And first load, we know, is a stretch. So just starting by stretching, putting a little overpressure, holding it for, you know, a minute. Mm-hmm. And seeing if
actively
you can,
holding it.
Yeah, actively holding it, seeing if you can breathe there. And then we go into isometrics. Isometrics are such a great thing. Isometric just means that you're not going to get any movement, but you're still going to be loading the area. Mm-hmm. So whether you're using your other hand, whether you're using a wall, or just holding a weight at a certain area, like, can I do it from extension and come up? Can I start to slowly bend my wrist a little bit more and hold and tolerate like a little bit deeper into that strain or that pressure that it's going to put right on the inside of the elbow?
And remember, the wrist moves in three different planes. We have flexion, extension, we have that ulnar and radial deviation that we were talking about, and then we have the pronation and the supination. Yeah. So doing this active, passive range of motion and then loaded isometrics in all of those different movements
all
is important.
All different ways, yeah.
Because again, we talked about radial deviation and ulnar deviation possibly being able to elicit your symptoms. Pronation and supination, yes, there's something that attaches there that does pronation. So being able to, I mean, in physical therapy, we have these like funny rubber dowel type things that you'll give people who are having hand, wrist, elbow issues to do all these different pronation, supination exercises, almost like you're just wringing out a towel, you know, working on stuff like that, can really go a long way to just like reintroduce to your elbow and wrist, okay, this is what you've been ignoring a little bit. This is what we might need to build up a little bit more before you go back to working 8 hours as a mechanic again.
Totally.
And it can help balance up that system.
But just talking about isometrics, I mean, that can mean that's like, think of your hand moving in any different way and you're just going to resist it trying to go that direction, right? So even if you had your hand in neutral, grab around like the wrist complex and then say, okay, I'm going to stop it from my thumb moving down. I'm going to stop it from my thumb moving back. I'm going to stop it from my hand coming forward. I'm going to stop it from my hand going back. Like all of these different, or going down toward my pinky, going up toward my thumb. Those are all isometric holds. And my hand didn't move, but the pressure of where I'm resisting can move all the way around. And that is such an easy way to just start loading without needing any tools except your own hands.
Yeah. And then what we really like to talk about, especially when we start talking about reorganization of some of these tendinosis or these tendon processes, is eccentrics. Mm-hmm. And again, that's like you're starting with your fingers and your wrist flexed down towards your forearm and then loading and then slowly letting it down and out all the way into that stretched position. Starting into those eccentrics, a lot of the times we might be able to load in an eccentric phase before we start to go from that really lengthened phase with our wrist cocked back to flexing it all the way forward, loaded, that might be a little tougher initially. Yeah. So starting with the eccentrics, that's going to really help to put the right kind of load on that tendon to start and more so perpetuate that healing and reorganization process of like the collagen in the area.
Exactly. And then studies have shown again, like 12 weeks of just working on eccentrics have helped to decrease symptoms and pain that having at that area, as well as increased grip strength, because obviously you're holding something as you're doing these eccentrics.
For sure.
The studies also showed, which is nice, is to, you have to work on your shoulder as well. It's a part of the picture as to what's happening at the elbow. And we talked about this in tennis elbow as well. We need strong external rotation, external rotators at the shoulder. So think of like doing like a wall angel and kind of placing those forms back onto the wall, and then abduction. So the arm moving away from the body. We need strong, Dom like to say, snow angels.
Snow angels, yes, please.
Wall angels,
thank you.
Whatever, the same thing. But that same motion, and think of that, like we talk about that a lot in rotator cuff injuries, which I believe is episode 4. If we did talk about rotator cuff injury. So if you want to go back and listen to like how to really get that shoulder strong, because we have to look at the areas above and below when we're talking about the area of injury.
Totally. And then once we kind of work on this whole system, we look at the areas above and below, really getting back into those job specific duties.
Yep.
And finding out, okay, why did this happen in the first place? Because I mean, often it's doing something like opening a pickle jar, but doing it for 8 hours straight every day, all day. Like that doesn't really make sense to do in our body. So how can we find ways to work where we're able to take breaks from the thing that may have been aggravating or may have perpetuated the problem in the first place, to avoid from that happening again.
Exactly. And breaks can just mean like, okay, I'm going to take my body away from this. I'm going to do the opposite motion for a little bit, whether that is a stretch, whether that is a movement, whether that's opening up the entire back, the chest, the wrist, the shoulders. Like, again, it's not just the area that is affected. It's working, making sure you have good wrist mobility. Also done a podcast on that, making sure you got good shoulder mobility, upper back mobility. So working the entire complex so that we ultimately keep the area healthy.
Yeah, we talk about taking breaks in the workspace. And if you're doing a job that's fairly repetitive, again, it doesn't mean you have to do less work in the workday. It's actually proven that if we give ourselves a 5-minute break every hour, we're going to be more productive during our working time.
Mm-hmm.
And during that 5 minutes, or I like to say, give yourself a minute every 30 minutes to stand and go in the opposite direction.
Exactly.
Open up your chest, get up against the wall and do a pec stretch, do an open book exercise, whatever it is to get that body moving in, like you said, an opposite direction of how we're positioned. Because generally, if we're working with our hands a lot, some of these jobs that we listed in construction, doing stuff like mechanic work, a lot of the times you're hunched forward over a car or, you know, working construction, you're always going to be kind of in that forward rolled position, even just, of course, sitting at a desk, stuff like that. Give yourself a minute every 30 minutes or five minutes every hour to open up.
Thank you again for joining us on yet another PT Pearl. We just appreciate you so much. And of course, if you need more visuals for each PT Pearl, they are over at Doc Gen Fit on YouTube. There is a whole section for the PT Pearls from the Optimal Body Podcast that you can use to really see what we're talking about. And don't forget, if you really like this, if you're learning from it, share it out, share it with your community. Tell us what you're learning, rate and subscribe to the episode, because there's going to be so many more goodies and PT Pearls along the way. And if you're ready to dive in even deeper, don't forget, we have an Optimal Body membership with an incredible community of movers learning with us and moving in their body. Until next time, thank you again.